Hi, my name is Noel Bell, and today I'm chatting with Charlie Morley. Charlie is a lucid dreaming teacher and practitioner of Tibetan Buddhism, specializing in the use of both Western scientific and Tibetan Buddhism dream practices, with the aims of bringing mindful awareness into all stages of dream, sleep, and waking life. Charlie is the co-creator of a new holistic approach to conscious sleeping and lucid dreaming called Mindfulness of Dream and Sleep. This new approach includes practices which aim to help us sleep better, dream more lucidly, and wake up with more awareness, clarity, and joy. I caught up with Charlie at the Gateways to the Mind conference in London in November 2012, organized by Archetype Events. Charlie, so how did you first get involved with lucid dreaming?
My first contact that I remember with lucid dreaming was just before my 12th birthday. And I remember I wanted this thing called a Nova Dreamer, which was this like sleep mask with a little computer in it that flashes red light and tells you when you're dreaming so you can have lucid dreams. And I remember it was a Sunday afternoon and I found it in a paper and I was reading about it. I thought, oh, lucid dreams, that's, you know, I've had a few of them. And this device helped you have more. So I remember I wanted one. I told my dad, you know, I know what I want for my birthday. I want this. And he said, you know, $250, you know, you're dreaming. So I didn't get it. But that was my first kind of contact with lucid dreaming, I think. And then when I was about 15, 16, I started to get interested in Buddhism and lucid dreaming and psychedelic drugs and UFOs. And I just started getting this feeling that there must be something bigger than just this, you know. And did the drugs thing and all that for a couple of years, you know, as a lot of teenagers do, and got into lucid dreaming then. So I taught myself when I was about 16. But the Buddhist stuff was kind of in the background. And then when I was 19, I took refuge, which is like where you formally become a Buddhist. And then I discovered this thing called dream yoga, which was a series of Tibetan Buddhist practices which have lucid dreaming at their core as a foundation. So I was like, wicked, well, I know how to do that now because I've been, you know, learning how to do it since I was 16. But when I was 16 to 18, I was just using lucid dreams to, like, have sex and fly through the sky and just have fun, basically. But then when I got into the Buddhist stuff, I realized, oh, I can use it for meditation, I can use it for receiving teachings, I can use it for going beyond the dream state. So that's when it really took off. But it was never something I set out to do. It was just a practice. So it came as a surprise when I was 24 and I got asked to give some talks on lucid... Well, I was 25 and actually started giving the talks on lucid dreaming. And I thought it was just a one-off talk. But then they asked me to give another one and then another one. And then, you know, 4 years later, here I am still doing it. So who knows? At the moment, the experiment seems to be working out. If it's all over tomorrow, it's been great fun.
We had your talk earlier and what I found was that there was just incredible energy as well as incredible insights. And one of the things I was struck by when you said there's no tools, there's no club, us in the crowd, we're not being asked for 10% of our income. Is there a kind of skepticism in the wider public? If, you know, the 10% of income clubs are there, is that kind of in the...
I mean, the way I try and present lucid dreaming, I mean, sometimes I'm teaching in kind of Buddhist centers, so it is wrapped up with spirituality. But sometimes I'm just teaching people who are interested in dreams, because everyone does it. And as I said, you know, there's no equipment to buy, there's no club to join, all you need are your dreams. So I see it as my little kind of mission, as it were, is to try and dispel that view of lucid dreaming as being something tied up in religiosity and something reserved just for, you know, Tibetan dream yogis living in the Himalayas, and actually bringing it back to something that's very real and very accessible. That doesn't mean that in any way the techniques are being diluted, but I think we can strip away some of the stuff that does lead people to feel a bit more skeptical and a bit, you know, is this for me or just for Buddhists? We can strip that back and be left with something that's still a pure practice but is available to everyone. So because I've always taught like that, I haven't encountered a lot of kind of skepticism around it, because I've always wanted to present people with the science. But to be honest, I think if you didn't, yeah, you'd have a lot of skepticism. Some people don't even know this exists, let alone that it's scientifically validated, let alone people have been doing it thousands of years. So if you weren't presenting the science along with the spirituality stuff, then I think, yeah, a lot of people would, you'd have a lot of kind of raised eyebrows.
When you got on to talk about the benefits,
yeah,
I was very intrigued when you talked about the treatment for trauma and dealing with nightmares and recurring nightmares. Is it possible through lucid dreaming to overcome nightmares?
Let's put it like this. I can't remember the last time I had a nightmare where I didn't get lucid. So I still have nightmares, but I'd say 99% of the time I have a nightmare, I get lucid in that nightmare. And once lucid, can then transform that nightmare into something beneficial or integral to my psychological growth. So it's not that lucid dreaming, you stop having nightmares. In fact, you'll get to the point where you want to have nightmares. I mean, I love horror movies. And I'm not saying you intentionally go and do this, but if I'm watching a good horror movie, you know, late at night, I will be aware this might come into my dreams. And I hope it does, because then if I can get lucid in that dream, I can transform this and learn to work with the darkness. But it will get to the state, where you stop viewing nightmares as something negative. So by its very definition, it kind of stops being a nightmare. It becomes a very exciting dream with kind of scary aspects rather than being a nightmare as you would perceive it. Yeah, that becomes very possible.
And we just heard the inspirational talk from Robert as well. Now, I'll be speaking to Robert, but he talked a lot about the Jungian integration of the shadow. And there was a question from the floor about how to maybe deal with more actualization in terms of potential in the material world.
Yeah, the woman who was asking about how to pay the rent in the lucid dream. Yeah, overcoming blockage and often, you know, or apparently blockages to our economic state will often be through blockages of our own kind of abundance and all this kind of stuff you hear, manifestation and stuff. I guess so. I guess maybe it's true. I actually felt a bit embarrassed when Robert was saying that because I don't have such qualms. So I went into the lucid dream a few weeks ago and asked what the lottery numbers were, and I got them and I won. Only a tenner. I only asked for three numbers. You know, I haven't actually played the lottery, so I thought three numbers was enough.
Are you going to set up a syndicate? I might buy shares in it.
Well, I called out in the lucid dream, give me the lottery numbers. If I win, I'll give it to charity. And then, boom, the word BBC appeared. And BBC, oh, the BBC lottery. And then this dude appeared. He looked like some sort of authority figure, a bit like a soldier. Not soldier, I don't know, some sort of authority figure. And I said, what are the lottery numbers? And he said, whatever they were, 29, 35, 18. And I said, is that it? That's the lottery numbers. He went, those are the three lottery numbers. Now, of course, I should have asked, well, what are the other two? Because then I could have won millions. Anyway, I woke up, I went online, BBC lottery, entered the three numbers. The other two numbers, I just put random numbers because I didn't know what they were. The three numbers that he gave me in the dream came up in the lottery and I won. Only a tenner, but there's still the potential to do that. I've kind of checked in with some of my Buddhist guides on this, and apparently, yes, if the motivation is to give it to charity, it's A-okay to do that. If the motivation is to get rich quick, then I'm with Robert on that. Not such a beneficial place to do it in the dream.
You're listening to an interview with Charlie Morley, lucid dreaming teacher and practitioner of Tibetan Buddhism, with me, Noel Bell. I got a sense that there's a kind of a marrying of the Western and Eastern.
Yeah, it was very interesting listening to Robert, right? I'm supposed to be the guy who's teaching this stuff within the context of Tibetan Buddhism. Robert Wagoner goes up, this wonderfully unassuming, gentle, beautiful man, and he starts talking about dreams, but I think he might be some sort of, well, I'm going to say off the record, but I'm on record, aren't I? I think he has links, possibly past life links, to some form of Buddhism. Because those dreams he was saying and the knowledge of certain Buddhist practice that he's never read about, you know, that guy's not going to lie about something like this. You know, he's such a kind, gentle guy. I think Robert is probably even marrying it more than I'm doing. You know, I'm supposed to be the guy, you know, teaching it from the Buddhist point of view. It's what Robert shows is that this marriage of the Eastern and Western views on dream practice is happening whether we like it or not. Whether it's someone like me who's self-consciously trying to promote that, whether it's someone like Robert who it's just landing on him in the lucid dream. It seems like the time is ripe for this marriage. And it's happening.
And also, mindfulness techniques are being used in some forms of therapy, even in the NHS.
Yeah. You know, mindfulness, the best rebranding of meditation I ever heard. Mindfulness meditation, this is the full term of the practice. But call it meditation, They haven't been able to get it in the NHS, they haven't been able to get it at schools, haven't been able to get it in anywhere. Suddenly they take the meditation bit off, call it mindfulness, and now, as you say, it's in the NHS, it's in schools, it's in public services. So amazing rebrand of the word mindfulness. But you're right, that is being used now. And mindfulness is full on, you know, this is Buddha taught mindfulness. This is full on Buddhist meditation with the Buddhist bit stripped out. And that's one of the reasons why what I teach is actually mindfulness of dream and sleep, not just lucid dreaming. And mindfulness of dream and sleep is a way to engage these mindfulness practices throughout all stages of waking up, dream, and falling asleep. To see that if we focus too narrowly on the lucid dream, we're missing a trick. Because we sleep for a third of our lives, 30 years, but we're only dreaming for about six of it. So if we're just focusing on lucid dreaming, I think we're missing a trick there. We need to work on conscious sleeping practices and meditation into and out of sleep using mindfulness meditation.
Where do you see lucid dreaming in the next 10 or 20 years? Some would say lucid dreaming will be more embedded in public administration, in counselling and psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. How do you see it going?
I think there will be a time within the next 5 or 10 minutes. 5 or 10 minutes.
That would
nice
be quick.
Slip there. Nice psychological
slip. We let it
slip.
That out,
maybe
don't
it'll
we?
Happen. No, leave it in. It's wonderful. My brain thinks this is happening in 10 minutes.
Okay.
In the next 5 or 10 years. When lucid dreaming will be used as a therapeutic tool. I think there'll be a time where you will go to lucid dream therapists. So once you've stabilized your own lucid dream practice, you'll go to a therapist and they will help you or give you advice on what to do in your next lucid dream. So they'll help you with the wording of the statements of intent. They'll help you with the visualization, healing mm-hmm. techniques that you'll do. They'll actually work with you. Maybe even the therapist will guide the patient into a lucid dream. In much the same way as a hypnotherapist does, but maybe with lucid dream therapists, your appointments are 4 o'clock in the morning. So you go and meet them, they then bring you, they guide you back into the sleep state, REM, of course, the second 4 hours of sleep when you're most likely doing it, and may even guide you like a hypnotherapist does, but into the lucid dream. And that seems quite far out now, but I think we're approaching a state of that. I think that maybe 5-10 years is too long. Maybe it will be 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah, so maybe when we leave this room...
it will have happened.
Well, I'll be certainly more aware of myself.
Yeah, man.
Just finally, because I know we're at a stage of recording where lunch is being sought. But anyone listening who maybe has become aware of the symbols of their dreams, mm-hmm. but it isn't a kind of regular practice mm-hmm. and they just... are waiting to take off in terms of how to get more awareness into their dreams. Mm-hmm. How practically could they go about it?
They should inspire themselves to practice. This is DIY stuff. Mm-hmm. As I said, there's no equipment to be bought, there's no club to join. Do it yourself. So buy a book on lucid dreaming. Watch DVDs on lucid dreaming. Look at websites on lucid dreaming. Although some are a bit rubbish, so use your discretion. Go to a lucid dreaming workshop, go to a lucid dreaming talk. But bring it into your life. You know, there might be people who've had a few lucid dreams, but having a few lucid dreams is not the lucid dreamer make. You know, a lucid dreamer is someone who sees the full potential mm-hmm. of the few lucid dreams they might have had and use it as a form of mind training to profoundly influence their waking state and dream state. And just that shift in perception, this is what will bring the lucid dreams. Because once you shift your perception, you'll see this is a practice that's worth doing. That is worth waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning for. That is worth keeping my dream diary every day for. That is worth learning new techniques and going to workshops for. But until we shift that perception from seeing lucid dreams as something which are an odd and amusing occurrence to something which is a profound insight into the nature of mind, until that happens, we're not going to have a stabilized practice.
And we are to have fun.
Of course. We need to take this seriously, like... Take the practice seriously as in you need to do it, but at the same time, don't take it too seriously. And, of course, take the practice seriously to get into the lucid dream, but once you're in the lucid dream, it's not going to be serious in there. Lucid dreams are some of the most fun you can have with your clothes on, and maybe with your clothes off, depending if you sleep in the nude or not.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that note, it's is it sushi time or...
Sushi time, yes, exactly. I'm going to engage my full potential of health and fitness this lunch break. I incepted an idea that I was my full potential of health and fitness and then woke up and was having sushi cravings for about 6 weeks afterwards. The sushi cravings have subsided now, but I might treat myself today.
Sounds good.
Cool. Cool, man.
Thanks for talking
with
us, Charlie. You've been listening to an interview with Charlie Morley. For more podcasts, visit noelbell.net/podcasts.